you're in the home 6010.
Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Go to geico.com today. And we are back with sort of a schedule in hand. It is the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. I am Field Yates, joined as always on a Wednesday, a little bit a day late with some stuff happening, by Matthew Berry and Stefania Bell. Matthew, how are you?
I'm good, Field Yates. I'm excited about our schedule release tonight. Me and you, Stefania, Mike Clay, and all of our friends over at Daily Wage are doing doing 2 hours live on ESPN Plus, breaking down the schedule at 8 p.m. Eastern. So very excited about that. I've been crunching numbers. I've been, crunching calendars, circling dates. Turns out a lot of the games get played on Sunday, Field. I can break that news right here. There's some Thursdays and Mondays in there, a Saturday or two, but ultimately it looks like most of the games will be played on a Sunday.
Gotcha. Stefania, do you have anything to add to that? Have you heard that from any of your sources, or do you want to maybe dispute Matthew's reporting there?
I mean, I don't know if I can top that analysis right there. I think I just want to let it breathe on its own.
Am I the Adam Schefter of calendar reporting? I might be.
You might be. Yeah. I'm actually kind of like, I don't have too many pet peeves in life, but schedule leaking is up there for me. I just find it so disingenuous. It's just lame, right? You're going to find out this tip picking during the draft. You're going to find out 30 seconds later. Like, just give yourself a little bit of time. I look forward to, as you mentioned, Matthew, 8 p.m. Eastern time for our show. The NFL will announce the schedule at 7:45. We'll break it down 15 minutes after that for 2 hours. But I do love allowing the excitement to build until the moment it is released in totality. So here's what we're going to do today.
Yeah, so you don't like people spoiling things for other people. Much like I
know where this is going.
Much like I will, LeSean McCoy is a sworn enemy of mine forever and ever because of him spoiling Avengers Endgame for so many fans out there that waited 10 years for that movie. Is it more the spoiling of it, or is it more the clout chasing? Because it feels like it's all sort of like, listen, you're a reporter, you break news, you pride yourself on having the story first. And it feels like breaking things like an NFL draft pick 30 seconds earlier, just because you happen to be in the,
you're at the draft.
You're at the draft, right? And you're not on TV, or you're watching it on TV, or because you have scheduling, it feels like sort of low hanging fruit for people trying to clout chase in terms of breaking news, if you will.
I would say for the most part, I don't want to turn this into something that, comes back to look poorly upon us, but I personally enjoy the moment around 7:45 when we get to look at the schedule in its totality. And by the way, we know who each of these teams are playing. It's just a matter of when these games are going to be held. The NFL did announce its week one schedule earlier this morning. Each of the networks is going to broadcast the games, rolled out their respective collection of games. Go check out really anywhere. Go to ESPN.com. You can find out who your team is playing in week one and at what time. But what we're going to do today is we're going to revisit some questions that we answered on ESPN.com as part of a roundtable. We are not having the Fantasy Football Summit this year. Obviously, a unique year again. We did a sort of virtual modified one last season, but this is a year where there's still some unique challenges for us. So we're going to be back hopefully in full force next year. So this roundtable will sort of serve as a quasi mini, I guess, maybe a little bit of a mini summit, if you will. But before we get to the roundtable questions, a couple of pieces of news, and I want to go in reverse order from the note. I know this is not earth shattering, Matthew, but the Eagles did claim Kerryon Johnson off of waivers. Of course, Daniel's Lions released him on Thursday. He gets claimed on Friday. Is there a takeaway here? Because I know you, A, had a take on Twitter, and B, seemed to generate quite a stir with that take.
I just think this idea that Miles Sanders is a franchise RB1 for fantasy football purposes seems a bit misguided. And the fact that, and so, people argue, listen, last year, I was down to Miles Sanders. Miles Sanders made the preseason hate list. He was going, his ADP was like RB6, RB7. Like, it was crazy, the hype around Miles Sanders. You know, and I got chastised quite a bit. I remember our former colleague and friend, Adam Kaplan, who's very close with the Eagles organization, covers them, has covered them for years, you know, went after me on Twitter for, you know, saying that I didn't think he would be, you know, a fantasy RB1. I think Adam's phrase was he will be fantasy gold and a rock star. And I just don't know what I'm talking about when it came to that. And of course, you know, Miles Sanders did not have a great fantasy year. Some of that was team related. Some of that was injury related. But the fact of the matter is Miles Sanders finished, I think, at Kyle. Tell me, Kyle, it was, I want to say off the top of my head, I think he finished as RB16 on the season, something like that. I think I had him at RB15 in my ranks. I mean, you know, so it's like, my point is that, and that was with Boston Scott as his main, you know, he got a decent amount of work, but last year in terms of when he was healthy. But listen, Kerryon Johnson, Boston Scott, they added Jordan Howard. We'll see if all of them make the team. But the fact is, and I'm getting a note here, he was running back 23 overall, running back 17 on a points per game basis. No matter, and Kyle texted me as well, running back 17. Thank you, Thursday, Kyle. Thank you, Damien. So, you know, here's a guy that on a points per game basis, by all accounts, was a disappointment last year in terms of where he was drafted in terms of his ADP. And now they've added Kerryon Johnson. I know it's a new coaching staff and it's a new regime, but by the way, it's a new coaching staff and it's a new regime that don't have as much invested in Miles Sanders. Do I think he's a talented player? I do, Field, but do I think he's an RB1 in fantasy? I don't. And I have yet to be proven wrong on that. I would love to be proven wrong on that, but I mean, you know, there are other players, there are other young players, Jonathan Taylor, Cam Akers, DeAndre Swift, who at least showed RB1 potential last year in limited fashion. That's my take.
That's fair enough.
Feel free to argue with me. I mean, disagree with any of that.
No, I don't have any strong disagreements with what you said. I think I probably like the talent of Miles Sanders a little bit more, and I'm a little bit more hopeful that he can seize an RB1 type role this year. But some of the personnel additions that you referenced, and we don't have an extensive track record on what Nick Sirianni looks like as a play caller because he didn't handle that job in Indianapolis. But the roots of what Nick Sirianni has learned under have been players, you know, somewhat of a committee approach. So I understand where you're coming from, Matthew. I'm not going to get too all up in arms about your take. Kerryon Johnson, of course, still has to make the roster, as you noted, but is an interesting addition for them. The Dolphins were the other team to try and claim him, which I thought was interesting as well, given that we're going to talk about a Dolphin running back in just a moment.
Kerryon Johnson, I was surprised. Daniel, were you surprised that Kerryon Johnson was waived by your Detroit Lions, given how devoid of talent that team is, how many massive holes there are on that team talent wise. And Kerryon Johnson at age, he's, I don't think he's even turned 24 yet. I think he turns 24 later this month.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That Kerryon Johnson, you know, at age 23 has, you know, I think over 1700 total yards in the NFL. I mean, like, I don't know. Like, I felt like Kerryon Johnson, like, obviously injuries he'd had some issues there, but I think he's a talented running back, it feels like, from what I saw, right?
I just want to say this. I feel the same way that you feel. I was a little bit surprised. Feel maybe this is more your idea here, but like Kerryon's contract was cheap. And the idea that you had a running back who was good in pass protection, who would go out there and do everything that you asked him to do. I loved having him on this team. Yes, he was not as explosive. He had lost a little bit of that from the injury. Stefania, I'm sure that you could weigh in from that perspective. But he's a kid that went out there and always gave 110%, and he wasn't a scrub. And he was still on his rookie deal, which was really inexpensive. I was surprised, knowing that we're going to sign another running back, probably to that same amount of money, that unless it's just, hey, Kerryon wants to get out, we want to do you a favor. You're obviously not in our long-term plans, so let's let you go somewhere else, you know, to see if maybe you have a better shot of getting on the field.
I'll make it quick here. I know you say it doesn't sound like a lot of money, but $1.4 million is actually a reasonable amount of money for a guy who's probably, what, your third string running back at best this year. We know DeAndre Swift's going to be the guy. This is a team that doesn't have a lot of cap flexibility. I should say they have it right now, but they've got to be mindful of it because of some of the contracts they still have on the books in future years. I wasn't surprised by the move that much at all. I like Kerryon too for what he is. I just think that the Lions realize that probably doesn't fit in their future. He'll give them an opportunity to try to land somewhere else. I'm going to be really, really quick on the second piece of news because, again, I don't want to make this into something that it doesn't need to be. The Jaguars are likely to sign Tim Tebow, Stefania. It's generated significant news. We can keep this, like, we can just keep it right down the pike as much as possible here. This is a huge story because it's Tim Tebow. It's also a 33-year-old trying to make a team and a new position in a league he hasn't played in for over 3,000 days. There's a good chance that Tim Tebow isn't on the roster by like the middle of August, in my opinion. Do you see it differently?
No, I don't. I actually wonder if the strategy is more, you know, it's like treetops down. If you're looking at what is the media focusing on but Tim Tebow? And what happens to all the attention to Trevor Lawrence when everybody is looking at what Tim Tebow is doing? And maybe just in the sense of kind of, you know, being a guy that everyone's going to, you know, it's a positive in terms of the sense of his interactions with other players, his presence, the locker room, what have you. Maybe it's more smokescreen than anything else. And like, hey, Urban Meyer obviously has a relationship. Maybe, yes, they give him a legitimate chance, but at the end of the day, he doesn't make the roster. But in all the scurrying and coverage around that, Trevor Lawrence can quietly work his way up to being the starting quarterback without 9 million cameras in his face all the time. I just wonder if that's either a casual consequence of it or part of the strategy.
Yeah, I think the strategy is pretty simple, to be honest with you. Urban Meyer and Tim Tebow are like best friends. They've been attached to the hip for nearly 15 years now. He wants to see Tim succeed. He thinks he can be an influence. And sometimes stuff that we believe will be a huge deal on the outside internally registers a lot less than we think it's going to register. I think the Jaguars think this is not as big of a deal as we are making it out to be. Just as a heads up, Tim Tebow is now in the ESPN fantasy game. He is a tight end. I really don't want to say anything else on it unless you have something really, really strong you want to add, Matthew, because, again, we'll see if he even makes the roster. And if he does, he's probably like their third string tight end. You're not drafting any Jaguars tight end, much less the third stringer. Anything else to add before we move on to the roundtable?
Yeah, there's no fantasy value whatsoever. I agree with both of your points about as to, you know, sort of, you know, there may be motivations to add Tim Tebow to the team beyond just they think they can help. He can help on the field, right? It's also a small market team, you know, and Tebow jerseys, Jacksonville Tebow jerseys will sell. And he will put butts in the seat. He always does. The one thing I will say here is I just saw a lot of criticism about Tim Tebow on Twitter. And I put this out and I'll just say, you have to understand something. Tim Tebow is really, really famous and really, really rich. And he's on TV and he's got a really good life. And for him to go to an NFL training camp at age 33 and try to learn a new position and potentially look stupid and potentially get cut and, you know, go through all the criticism and hit the way, like, that's a lot of hard work. It's a real challenge. There's like no guarantee of success. In fact, I think most people would argue he is more likely to not succeed than to succeed. And for somebody who is currently in a really good position in life, I don't know. Like, I think that's, I admire, but he's doing it because he wants to challenge himself because he has a dream of still making it in the NFL. Like, I'm just saying on a personal level, and I'm not even like some huge Tebow fan, but like, I just admire the hell out of that. I just think, you know, pushing yourself and saying like, I could just sit here and be rich and famous and it is what it is, but I've been given this opportunity and I'm going to try to make the most of it. And if I fall on my face, I fall on my face. And I don't know. I admire the hell out of it. And honestly, I'm rooting for the guy, even if he doesn't catch one pass in the NFL this year. I'm rooting for him. I hope he makes the team. And I hope it's a great experience for him and the Jaguars.
All right, I'm going to leave it there. I think we've probably given it too much time already. And there's a lot to unpack that's not really related at all to what we do here on this podcast. Let's get to the roundtables. This stuff is actually interesting. So the first question was, name a veteran player who benefited greatly from what happened in the draft. Let's just each person go through with their answer. And Stefania, I'll start with you.
Yeah, well, I picked Myles Gaskin of the Dolphins because really, essentially when the draft was over, there was no one there that was going to threaten his status. He was the clear favorite among the Miami Dolphins squad. He did miss a little bit of time due to knee injury and COVID situation. But when he was there, the workload distribution tilted in his favor. And certainly as the season ended, he ended on a high note with them. So also a big target in the red zone for the Dolphins. And I think you like that coming in. You mentioned them kicking the tires on Kerryon Johnson, but ultimately they didn't go that route either. So again, Myles Gaskin remains the top running back for the Dolphins heading into the fall.
Yeah, it's a, it's certainly is, he feels like the big beneficiary. I'll be interested though, just because some of their actions, you know, between signing Malcolm Brown, drafting a late round pick, a seventh round pick on Jared Doakes, trying to claim Kerryon Johnson. I'll keep an eye on Miami throughout the offseason to see if they do eventually add more running back depth, but I'm with you, Stefania. As things stand right now, Myles Gaskin looks like RB1 down there. Matthew, who is your pick? And it's interestingly enough, you took my pick.
Did I take your pick or did you take my pick? I don't know. I think it.
Let me pull the curtain back here for a second.
Let me set this up.
Yeah.
Because to understand who took whose pick, and since we were working in a Google Doc, you might want to know who put their stuff in first. And I'm going to just let the audience go and think about who would be more likely to get their work done early, Field Yates or Matthew Berry.
Right. So here's the thing. That's all true, but just in terms of like, just so you under, if you really want to peel back the curtain here, all right. So yeah, it's like I don't even want to do this. Like I get an email on Monday morning that we've got to do this thing, or Monday afternoon that we got to do this thing by Monday at 5 o'clock. Okay, fine. So now we've got to do it on this Google Doc. Okay, great. So now I got to open up the Google Doc, and the truth is, so Matthew Berry, and then the way our names are listed, it was Stefania Bell, Matthew Berry, Mike Clay. Those are the three, and then you've got Matt Bowen, and it goes on, right? Cockcroft, Clarabelle, blah, 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 all the way down to Yates. So I would get to a question and I would see, by the way, Mike Clay, Johnny on the spot, he had already filled out his thing. So honestly, I was actually going to answer Myles Gaskin, but Mike Clay chose Myles Gaskin as well. And I thought, well, if Clay's going to do Gaskin, I also feel strongly about Mike Davis. So you know what? I'll just do Mike Davis there. Stefania, by
really
the way,
interesting.
Anything else, like just so you know, like Princeton over there also put in her answers after I did. So I don't want to hear any guff from her. let's be clear about that. So I didn't scroll down to see your answers field.
Gotcha.
I did try to avoid Mike Clay's answers because his answers were in there before mine. So I think the important thing here is we should never do this again.
Right.
But that's, I think, what the lesson here is.
Gotcha.
Everyone should do their own work by themselves in their own separate documents. But listen, Mike Davis, again, look, we know Arthur Smith likes to use the running back. Mike Davis is somebody who's been productive when he's gotten a start. This is a guy who, averaged, I want to say off the top of my head, over 15 fantasy points per game last year when he got double-digit touches. And a really nice pass-catching running back as well. He's obviously very, very different as a runner, as a player, than Derrick Henry. But I think it's worth noting just how much Arthur Smith used his running back, used play action, ran the ball when he was in close last year in Tennessee as their offensive coordinator. And so my expectation here is that you look at this, you know, I mean, all due respect to whatever, Kadri Allison, right? You know, I mean, we'll see if Caleb Huntley does anything or, you know, Javian Hawkins. But like, honestly, like at the moment, it appears that Mike Davis is going to be the starting running back on an offense that we think is going to be pretty good with Matt Ryan and Julio and Calvin Ridley and Kyle Pitts. Like, this is going to be a good offense. It's going to score a lot. They're going to be in scoring position. Arthur Smith likes to use the running back. So Mike Davis by the Falcons not taking a running back, pretty interesting to me. He's one of the big winners out of the NFL draft.
All right. So my answer is that Mike Davis is one of the big winners out of the NFL draft. You know, you think about the Falcons offense with Julio Jones and Matt Ryan and Kyle Pitts, they're going to score a lot of points. And who's in the back of their depth chart? Like Kadri Allison, like Javion Hawkins? Has anybody brought this stuff up or no?
No, great point, Field. That's a great point.
Okay, gotcha. No one's mentioned this, right? You think about Arthur Smith and his offense and like what he did last year with Derrick Henry. Mike Davis, you know, so I'm obviously joking. One thing I will say here is I'll just make it quick. I think Mike Davis is kind of underrated as a player. We've gotten to this point now in the NFL because there's so much amazing coverage that it's hard for a player to kind of slide under the radar or be underrated. Mike Davis is a good solid running back, not a top five player, not a top eight player, not a top 12 running back probably, but just a guy who is rock solid when he gets opportunities. And I think Atlanta, because of their salary cap situation, is not going to end up being someone who spends a bunch of money on a running back the rest of this offseason and probably not again next offseason. So, Daniel, let's get to you for your pick for the veteran who most benefited after the draft.
Yeah, and I'll be real quick on this, but I have A.J. Brown. I was really pleased to be able to see that. And by pleased, I mean, I would love to have more weapons for Ryan Tannehill to be able to have. But the Titans did not draft a wide receiver until the sixth round. No offense to Josh Reynolds, but they did not really add anyone. And they lost Corey Davis, Jonnu Smith, Adam Humphries, Khalif Raymond. That's 207 targets that have now vacated that offense. When you look at what A.J. Brown did last year at just over 100 targets, this is a guy that I definitely feel like is going to see a Davante Adams type workload, and he could see 150, 160, 175 targets this year as that main guy. Derrick Henry, A.J. Brown, he is someone for me. I have moved him up to wide receiver 4, I believe. And so he's someone that I definitely feel like could be, I mean, I would not be shocked if A.J. Brown was wide receiver 1 at the end of the season with the workload that he is going to get based on how the Titans handled the draft.
Well said, Daniel. I certainly hope they saturate him with all of the targets. Let's move down to roundtable question number 2. And the prompt was, name a veteran player you're fading as a result of the draft happening. So the inverse of question 1. And Stefania, let's start with you as always. Who are you picking?
Melvin Gordon. I think Javonte Williams going to the Broncos. It was kind of the saying something without saying something. Broncos like the physical run game. Thus the departure of Philip Lindsay, not so much of a surprise. You know, they pick up Javonte Williams, who's a tackle breaker, a hard runner. And I think with Melvin Gordon's injury history and just aging running back in the NFL, they wanted someone who could complement him. I think it's ultimately a great move for Denver. I just think for fantasy purposes, it's going to be messy for us.
I would agree on that. Javonte Williams, really talented guy out of North Carolina, obviously. Melvin Gordon still has his full salary guaranteed for this upcoming year, so one would think he sticks around in Denver, but a work share is not what you're looking for. Matthew, again, you being the beacon of creativity that you are, also took both mine and Daniel's answer. So why don't you go ahead and speak for us?
It'd be my pleasure. You know, and honestly, I think that's what America's choice is for me to speak for you guys at all times on every subject. Honestly, look, just because it's obvious doesn't mean it's not true. And it's James Robinson, right? I mean, that's the biggest answer, right? So James Robinson, who, you know,
I thought James Robinson too, but I didn't want to steal Field and Daniel's answer.
Right, because Stefania has respect for the process and integrity.
Did you scroll down on that list to see what other people had selected, Stefania? Is that how you knew?
Because she was last. She was last to do her work.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay.
And so by that point,
we don't know. No, I actually did my work before I went on the list. And then I checked to see if somebody else had done it. If it was like one person, maybe I'd do it. But if it was like 50, then I tried to stay away. But go ahead, 50.
But then I thought, okay, so I could either, like, again, this is how dumb this exercise is. I could either, like, change my answer, like, right? Like, say something I don't believe to give a different name, or do you just give the answer it honestly? So I decided honestly. Who's Matthew the better Mary. Player that I'm fading as a result of draft happenings? That was the actual question. And the answer is obviously James Robinson. This is a guy who was a top five fantasy running back coming into the season. After last year, this is somebody who had like insane volume last year, right? He had the seventh most fantasy points among all running backs, right? And so, but a lot of that was due to just his insane, insane volume. And I was already going to fade him a little bit because I didn't think he was going to get that kind of volume with Carlos Hyde there. Carlos Hyde's, you know, still spry, still going to get a little bit of work. right? And we expect their offense to be better and not so reliant on Robinson with Lawrence and, you know, their passing game. We expect it to be better. But then they add Travis Etienne. And I know Urban Meyer said, oh, he's going to be our third down back, which is the dumbest thing in the world. Like, you know, without going too far down this rabbit hole, I'll just say that Urban Meyer has, in the past, said things that have later turned out not to be true. So I do not believe Urban Meyer when he says Travis Etienne is going to only be a third down running back. If he is, he's a much dumber football coach than I thought, because Travis Etienne is a special player, and I think he's going to prove that sooner rather than later. I don't know if he's all three downs from game one, but you think about, again, you know, DeAndre Swift, Cam Akers, Jonathan Taylor, you know, think about these rookie running backs last year that, you know, took them a little while, but once they got up to speed, it was clear they were the best running back on their team. And that is what I expect to happen with Etienne. As a result, Robinson, at best, part of a three-head committee, more likely he is merely insurance. If you draft Travis Etienne, I'm fading him this year.
Couple of other, again, you said a lot there. So obviously Daniel and I see a lot of it the exact same way. And we'll talk about Etienne in just a moment again, by the way. But some other veterans that were named by trusty members of our panel include Tevin Coleman for the Jets. That was via Matt Bowen. Raheem Mostert for the Niners. Hayden Hurst of the Falcons. And then Eric Carabel agreed with Stefania's assessment because Eric, also a very smart person, of Melvin Gordon.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza, better because it has to be.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com today, or just stop by.
Third question, I'll go right back to you, Stefania. Which rookie are you most upset about with his landing spot?
Well, it just really dovetails off of what you were just talking about. I picked Travis Etienne, and yeah. I think because of, and not anything to do with him, not anything to do with the team. I think his opportunity ultimately for fantasy is great, just for the mess that it created for fantasy. At the time that we will all be doing our redraft leagues, that is why the question was answered in that way. They also added Carlos Hyde there. So again, you know, I think Etienne emerges. I agree with you guys 100%. I just think at the time that we will be making fantasy decisions in the preview of the fall, it will be messy. There won't be a lot of clarity. And so it creates a more of a problem for us in terms of drafting.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, Stefania, that was also my answer. So here, I just want to start by saying that I think the best case scenario for Etienne, well, the best case scenario for Etienne is that he just beats out James Robinson. He's a 100, you know, he's basically the guy from week one. I think the more likely scenario for Etienne is that they try to use him as sort of a bit player. And I mean that in a good way. So right after the draft, Urban Meyer conceded there was a player they were heartbroken to lose, to miss out on at pick 25 as the Giants took Kadarius Toney. Maybe the vision for Etienne is some Kadarius Toney-like elements. And we do this too frequently where a coach has coached a player previously and we try to make a new player that guy. I'm not trying to say that Etienne is Percy Harvin 2.0, but maybe some Percy Harvin-like stuff, jet sweeps and reverses and screen passes and short throws towards the line of scrimmage for Travis Etienne, even though he is a running back. Maybe there's some of that value for him. That being said, I would have loved it if you went to Pittsburgh as an example or Buffalo as an example. Matthew, who was your player?
Jalen Waddle going to Miami. Jalen Waddle, you know, one of, if not the most exciting explosive playmakers to come into the league this year, right? I mean, like just insane speed. And now he's going to Miami, and I get it. Like I think it's a good draft pick for the Dolphins, right? I mean, the Dolphins by their moves this offseason are like, listen, if Tua fails, it's not going to be because he doesn't have weapons, right? Yeah. They sign Will Fuller. They bring back Devontae Parker. They've got Gesicki, obviously. They drafted Hunter Long. It's a nice tight end prospect as well. Later on in the draft, they fortified the offensive line. They gave him Malcolm Brown, which is probably isn't super exciting for fantasy, but Malcolm Brown's a really, really good pass protector as a running back. So, like, they gave him – they're given – and now they give him Jaylen Waddle, right? And so, like, he's got a lot of weapons. So it's good for Tua. The problem is that, number one, is the jury is still out on whether Tua is going to be any good in the NFL, right? I am not on the bandwagon of bailing on Tua because, as so many people are, because, again, first-year injury, he didn't have a ton of weapons last year. So we'll see what he does in year two. But the fact is that he certainly is not a proven commodity in the NFL just yet. So number one is landing spot in terms of his quarterback. He's not necessarily it may not be a necessarily great landing spot for Jaylen Waddle. And then you think about this offense, which at least last year was fairly conservative, didn't do a lot down the field, right? And so, you know, listen, that's one of the things that'll be good about Waddle is, like, they can, to your point, sort of like what you were talking about, like Percy Harvin, Kadarius Toney, could they use him in some of those things, like jet sweeps and bubble screens and quick slants and try to take advantage of his speed? But, like, how many targets are there going to be, again, when you've got Fuller, you've got Parker, you've got Gesicki? And so all those things are a concern to me, plus the fact that I think the Dolphins' defense is pretty good. Like, I just don't think they're going to be in a lot of shootouts. So I think they're going to be in more low-scoring games than I think we think about. So really excited about Jaylen Waddle, the player, as a prospect. But in terms of fantasy landing spot, would have loved to have seen him land with a more explosive offense or a more proven quarterback.
All right, Daniel, bring us home. What do you got?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of what I'm going to say has to kind of reflect what Matthew Berry has said, but about Kadarius Toney, I felt the same way with him going to the Giants. I mean, they have so many position pieces there. They just signed Kenny Golladay, still have Sterling Shepard and Darius Slayton from before. Evan Engram, obviously, when he's healthy, is no slouch. Saquon Barkley, one of the best running backs in the NFL. And so from an NFL perspective, understanding you're giving Daniel Jones a ton of weapons to be able to utilize. And I know that that team struggled with injuries down the stretch. They had a really hard time getting all of their skill position players on the field at once. So I understand the idea of taking Kadarius Toney to help their football team. But from a fantasy perspective, there's only one football to go around. And like I said, Kenny Golladay, Sterling Shepard, Darius Slayton, Evan Engram, Saquon Barkley. Now you add in Kadarius Toney to that, and it's just, you know, it doesn't make me as excited as I was for Kadarius Toney heading into the pre-draft process. I was hoping he was going to go somewhere else and maybe he'd be a little bit higher. He does not make my top 50. In fact, I don't think he makes any of our top 50 at wide receiver, just with just another reason why how deep the wide receiver position is this year. It is just one of the deepest years at wide receiver that I can ever remember. So a little bit bummed that he ended up there. Still think he's going to be successful and he'll find a role in that offense. But he's got more people to be able to get through in that offense than I was hoping for pre-draft.
Yeah, Daniel, I think a lot of people feel the same way that you do. Love the process for the Giants in the first round. Maybe a little bit less excited about Tony's landing spot, given the context of the Giants' current passing game weapons prior to his arrival. Let's move forward here to a rookie that you like for dynasty formats. Very open-ended question here, Stefania. It's like, I'm not talking about Trevor Lawrence. Obviously, we all like Trevor Lawrence, but somebody that's not super obvious.
Yeah, I know. I mean... I could have gone with Trey Lance, but yeah. Everyone knows that I am happy about that pick, but I went off the board a little bit with Michael Carter going to the Jets. And I think that he has a chance to make an impact fairly quickly. And it's kind of surprising because we don't think of the Jets running backs traditionally as being, well, at least not of late, I should say, as being that solid, but he can catch passes. He runs with power. He is somebody who has a chance to be on the field more than he's not because he's good in pass protection as well. So I think he could make an impact fairly quickly. One of the criticisms has been the Jets offensive line. They obviously have made some moves to try and shore that up as well. They ranked, I think it was 29th in yards per carry before contact. So the running back's not getting much of an opportunity, but I think with Saleh there, some of the changes that they're making, I think that, that it's also going to be interesting to see since he brought Mike LaFleur there, how their offense is going to look in terms of what the running backs are able to do. So I'm watching Michael Carter.
Yeah, that was a good
value pick.
Yeah, and the Jets, of course, drafted two players named Michael Carter. One of them plays defense. One of them plays offense. You just talked about the offensive guy. All right, so Stefania, you went off the board for the dynasty stuff, and then Matthew and I decided to go right down the middle with Daniel. So Matthew, tell us more about Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, I mean, just again, just sometimes we try to get too cute and overthink it. So listen, I went super obvious with Trevor Lawrence, but the truth is that, I mean, you know, there's a reason why Trevor Lawrence has been called the, you know, the best prospect since Andrew Luck, right, to come out. And listen, I think you can make strong arguments for Ja'Marr Chase or Kyle Pitts. As Stefania said, Trey Lance, I've seen a number of fantasy analysts that I respect say that Trey Lance should be number one in dynasty formats this year. I'm going to go with Trevor Lawrence, though, just because, again, many dynasty formats use Superflex, which, if you're unfamiliar, basically means you can play two quarterbacks. And so quarterbacks are generally devalued in fantasy, but not in Superflex. And in dynasty, look, you know, quarterbacks have the longest shelf life of, you know, any position generally. You know, certainly, obviously, you know, wide receivers are next, and then, you know, running backs and tight ends. But, you know, so for me, it's, you know, for me, it's Lawrence. I think that he will, we've discussed this a lot, Field. I think he will run more than he gets credit for. Again, 17 rushing touchdowns at Clemson. I think they're going to, you know, give him every possible chance to succeed in Jacksonville. I already like some of the weapons around him, you know, LaVisca Chenault, DJ Shark, obviously, Marvin Jones. And so, yeah, I'm just excited about Trevor Lawrence and Dynasty.
I mean, obviously, he's obviously just a star in every single way. And you're right. The longevity certainly bodes well for a 10 or 15 or 18 or 20 year career, because Tom Brady is showing us that apparently some quarterbacks, or at least one, can play for 20 full years. Daniel, I'm going to be magnanimous. I'm going to let you take the answer on Kyle Pitts, the player that both you and I selected.
Oh, you're so sweet, Field. For me, it is all about positional scarcity at the tight end position. And this is a big stat that stood out to me. The difference between tight end 2 and tight end 3 last year was 102 fantasy points, which is just a massive drop off. Now, obviously, George Kittle got hurt, but when you look at the top 3 from that tight end position, it's Kelce, it's Kittle, and it's Darren Waller. So the idea that you have a position where I could draft a tight end who's as young as he is with an established quarterback in Matt Ryan and other pieces on that offense and Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones for now. We'll see what happens with Julio the rest of this offseason. You know, he is in a position where he will not be a focal point. He shouldn't be seeing the double teams. He's got a great offense around him. Arthur Smith coming in, and like I said, you know, a veteran quarterback. I love the idea of being able to lock up in dynasty a tight end position where finding a superstar is so much harder than a wide receiver or a quarterback. In these passing leagues, I just think finding a quarterback or wide receiver is a little bit easy. So give me that guy at a position where if you've got a Kelce or a Kittle, you are feeling strong every week because you know you always have an advantage over the person you're playing at that position.
Yeah. I mean, it's the most elusive position in fantasy football. I think basically everything you said, I agree with there, Daniel. So continue to Thanks, believe Phil. That Kyle Pitts is the guy in Dynasty that has the most unique value relative to his position. Let's go to one more, Stefania, here. One more is which rookie are you most excited about to draft in 2020 season-long leagues?
I don't have my notes.
Okay, well, your answer was Najee Harris. It was the same one that you, me, and Matthew always had.
For whatever reason, he didn't make the note cutoff. I love Najee Harris because he can do everything, right? And Pittsburgh loves their backs that are versatile, and they're looking for someone who can stay on the field. And I think that was part of the challenge with James Conner, and ultimately his struggles with staying healthy were an issue for him. So it's kind of like, now it's the next generation of running back. They want someone who can do it all. And Najee Harris should be able to do it all. There were some questions about his ankle coming out of Alabama, whether he had a problem there or not. I've been told his ankle is structurally sound. There are no major issues at all there. Everything is full go, and he's expected to be 100% when the season opens. So we know that what we always talk about in fantasy is like opportunity and availability. So as of right now, available, and as of right now, certainly looks like he's got tons of opportunity.
Matthew, if you had to give Najee an outlook relative on like the scale of Saquon Barkley, is probably the apex, maybe Josh Jacobs is somewhere in between, like where would you sort of rank Najee's outlook amongst guaranteed starters for his team in rookie outlook for fantasy? Like, is he going to be a top 15 pick in your opinion? Top 22, top 30? How high?
He did not. So we just released a new episode of the Fantasy Show on ESPN Plus, and when I revealed my top 20 rankings, overall rankings for 2021 on that show, and Harris was not inside my top 20 overall. He is inside my top 20 for running backs. So, you know, I think he's a top 15 fantasy running back, but he's not top 20 overall for me. But yes, I think he has the most obvious guaranteed workload of a rookie running back, right? So, yeah,
I agree on that. I mean, Najee, very talented guy. The big question mark, obviously, as we all know and I'm talking about, is whether the offensive line can hold its end of the bargain. Daniel, you decided to go off the board here. You went with Amon-Ra St. Brown from the Lions?
That's right. I mean, would you expect any different from me, Field Yates?
Of course it's not. So never, easy. ever. Yeah.
Listen, it's easy to pick off the top, but hear me out, all right? Because this is a classic Matthew Berry pick, right? Everyone's going to assume it's a homer. I'm just saying it because it's Amon-Ra St. Brown. But the Lions have no pass catchers. Tyrell Williams, Rashad Perriman, Khalif Raymond, they did not really add anybody other than Amon-Ra St. Brown, who is a physical slot receiver. He does not have as much speed as everyone else, but the Lions addressed that offensive line. He's a guy that I think late in drafts, it will not surprise me. I'm not saying he's going to be a superstar or anything like that, but late in drafts, this is a guy that could provide more upside because who else are the Lions going to throw the stinking football to? Jared Goff should hopefully have some time with them drafting Penei Sewell. That offensive line should be an above average offensive line. And so the investment and value that you could get Amon-Ra St. Brown very late in drafts is something that I think that there is value there and somebody that I'm going to watch because someone in that offense has to catch passes. So
Daniel,
for me,
remember on one of our prior podcasts, he was my pick as one
I of know, Stefania.
Right. So I am in full agreement with you. I also like the fact that he's really, really smart, speaks multiple languages. And,
agreed.
You know, like that clearly is going to help his fantasy value as well. But yeah. I agree. For value purposes, I think he's a standout.
Yep. When you think about all the rookie wide receivers, Jamar Chase, Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, we talked about, man, Amon-Ra St. Brown. Good for you, Daniel. I love you because you're loyal, if nothing
Thank
else,
you,
to your
Phil.
Detroit Lions, who might have a long year this year, but I know one thing. Daniel is going to stick with them no matter what. So this full roundtable with more thoughts from others, including Matt Bowen and Mike Clay and Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel, is available now on ESPN.com. And we're going to keep rolling. We're going to keep motoring through these podcasts throughout the rest of the offseason. Hopefully we'll have a little bit more news. But a couple of reminders before we say goodbye. One, tonight, schedule release show. If you are listening to this podcast on Wednesday, May 12th, 8 p.m. on ESPN Plus, Matthew, Stefania, Mike Clay, the entire Daily Wager crew, myself, we will be flapping gums for a couple hours on ESPN Plus. In the meantime, there is a new episode of the Fantasy Show out on ESPN Plus. Daniel, phenomenal in it as always. Matthew made an appearance. Anything else you guys want to plug before we say goodbye?
Well, yes, rotopass.com is now open for the season where you get a 12-month subscription to ESPN Plus where you can read, field your articles and Stefania's and Mike Clay's and mine, plus, of course, see the Fantasy Show on ESPN Plus and all the other great content, stuff from Mel and Todd, et cetera, et cetera. So a bunch of great stuff there, plus five other fantastic fantasy sites with draft software, dynasty ranks, best ball ranks, anything you need, use the promo code 06010 and get 10% off at rotopass.com. It really is the best deal on the internet.
Completely agree on that. Stefania, how about you? What are you working on? Anything you want to pass along?
All the sites I use. They're all the sites I use.
I will just lay out a tease for you. There is an updated version of Project 11. Because remember, when it aired on May 1st of last year, we left off not knowing if Alex Smith would return to football. And we stuck with it. We've got everything through his return all the way up to his retirement decision. A 90-minute version of Project 11 is coming soon, hopefully within the month. So stay tuned. And as soon as it's out, I will let everybody know.
Cannot wait to watch that. Of course, it'll be available on ESPN Plus after it's aired on TV as well. All right. So for Matthew and Stefania and Daniel on field, plus everybody behind the scenes, Kyle and Damian, and Tom and Matt, we got a long list of people that help us out, to help make us great. And Keith and Pete and the entire crew. We appreciate you all. We'll talk to you guys next week with hopefully some news to discuss. Maybe Matthew will, I don't know. Maybe Matthew will just, maybe he'll announce his NBA career. Or, I don't know. Something we can
Matthew,
talk about.
You making any progress on that Jimmy G contract?
Yes. Very, very close.
I mean, them signing Trey Lance obviously gives you a big chip, you know, in your pocket to be able to get him. So
very, very close. We're, you know, listen, we're trading proposals back and forth. We're working on it. We're getting together. We're crossing T's, dotting I's. So I expect him to be doing my laundry any day now.
All right. You love to hear it. You love to see it.
If you thought I came over just to visit Beth, wait a lot now. Just wait.
Just wait.
There's been a lot. Like, we got to get into this next podcast because Beth and Stefan have been spending a lot of time together.
Two peas in a pod. Yeah. All right. We are back next week. We'll talk to you then. Enjoy the scheduled show tonight.
Peace out.
See you in the 06010.